Hey, Chris Manning here from Locked On Cavs. Coming up on today's show, Evan and I are going to talk about the new deal for one JB Bickerstaff, talk about the Cavs Bulls game, and a whole bunch of other things because it's been a pretty crazy time up in the Cavs the last couple of days. So that's going to be just as always an interesting discussion for us to get into. That's coming up today on Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving, he's gone. Xbox at him today at the Q.
On the blow block.
He put him in cement boots, Colin Sexton for two.
Evan, what is going on, buddy? How are you on this Tuesday evening?
I'm doing all right. The Cavs, you know, kind of dropped a close one. It was an uglier game than I thought it would be, but surprisingly close in the end. And, you know, this whole coronavirus thing is weighing heavy on my mind. I actually had a stress dream last night that I caught it, and then I woke up very concerned that I had it for a minute.
That's not what you want, man.
No, it's not. I mean, it's better than the sleep paralysis demon that sits at the foot of my bed, so it's a good change up every now and then, you know?
Yeah, I just say melatonin, and a little Zoloft get you solve that effort pretty well. But a lot going on in the Cavs world today. Let's just start real quickly with just the latest on the coronavirus stuff, and then we'll talk about JB Bickerstaff. As we learned on Tuesday, there's a lot of developments across the state of Ohio in this regard. Mike DeWine, the governor, said that the state's recommendation is to not have any indoor sporting events with any, I believe, non-essential personnel and the teams themselves was the wording. And then you also had the MAC tournament. They're not going to have any general public, so no fans at the tournament this upcoming weekend in Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. At the same time, the Monsters will play in front of fans at their next home game. So, Evan, you and I are on the Cavs side of things. We've both kind of heard that they don't quite know what's going to happen there yet. There's a lot, I think, still going on with the coronavirus and how it's being handled publicly, and not just in Ohio but elsewhere. But what is your reaction to everything we kind of saw on Tuesday?
I think it's a damn shame that no one's going to watch the Akron Zips probably knock out your Ohio Bobcats for however many years it's been now. And,
wow, you use a pandemic to talk crap. This is unbelievable. Unbelievable. Well, I respect it.
Thank you. But other than that, yeah, it's to be determined what the Cavs are actually going to do. This might be a little bit of a preview of something to come, but I have been crunching the numbers a little bit. On average, 17,816 fans attend Cavaliers home games with an average ticket price of approximately $72 based on what I could pull off the internet because that information is not publicly available. Cleveland has 5 home games remaining this year, and they will lose roughly $6.4 million in ticket revenue alone, approximately $6.4 million. So we got to kind of consider things here. And then if you look at the Monsters, if you not including their Sunday game that they're going to play, they could lose up to around $3 million in ticket revenue based on attendance and just the average ticket cost across the board for a Monsters game. So the Cavs do have the Cavaliers organization and I guess Dan Gilbert as a whole has a lot to lose here financially, but I think they're just going to kind of take the wait and see approach. I think the MAC tournament pulling out of this out of the Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse is definitely a big blow to what they're planning on doing. Every college campus in the state of Ohio is pretty much shutting down at this point. My brother's on spring break with Toledo right now, and he texted me today saying, like, well, my spring break goes till March 30th now. And I'm like, wait, seriously? He's like, yeah, I don't have to go back to school. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool.
But, I mean, they still have classes. There's that. Note. I'm sure someone at Ohio University is going to turn this into like coronavirus fest, and I'm just going to be like mostly ashamed because that's not what you want.
Hey, you guys got to have a reputation for something other than losing to Akron in the MAC tournament.
I'm just saying Sweet 16, yeah. Evan, DJ Cooper,
fuck DJ Cooper. Fuck, wow, this is too.
I'm gonna go over Kirk Carter Rodriguez now. That's where we're at. That's where we've come to.
Before we jump back on this serious topic, Carter did say Alex Abreu getting busted for all that pot was one of the best days of his life, and it was one of the worst days of my life as a college basketball fan.
I remember where I was. I was sitting in the OU Student Union when I found out about that. I was just like eating like a probably like a very unhealthy lunch because I used to be really fat, and that was definitely like the time where I was like drinking Red Bull on my lunch break. So not what you want.
There you go.
Okay, but that's where we're at.
In all seriousness, I don't know what the Cavs are going to do, but if I was a betting man, it would not surprise me, and I wouldn't bat an eye if the Cavaliers and every team in the NBA just kind of shuts their doors to public spectators, because the health risk and the possible catastrophic effects that this could have is well not worth a financial loss that some teams may be facing in terms of just like ticket revenue and concessions. So that's where I'm at least.
Yes. The other thing going on right now is in kind of bigger long-term news, we would assume, is that JB Bickerstaff has agreed to a multi-year deal to be the Cavs head coach. According to ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski, the deal is through the 2023-2024 season. There's some reporting out there that indicates that him and Kobe Altman's fates are sort of on the same timeline, which, okay, from some other stuff out there. But that's all we're going to say right now. In regards to this, Evan, here, I'll just say this. I don't have a problem with this. Number one, I think this was signaled to me, and I think has just kind of been out there to everyone, that this was going to be like a thing. I think, frankly, for an organization that has not been stable, that could just use someone that's steady and can relate to the players and whatnot. Like, I think JB is a level of competent that I think is worth it. You know, we don't have, like, again, like you made a really good case for it. In going after Kenny Atkinson, I get the appeal of that, but I if you think about like all the stuff that is going on, in the league right now, you could have a bunch of head coach openings this summer. Why would he necessarily come and pick the Cavs? You know, I think that's fair to wonder, unless like a new GM were to come in and then hired him, like, which obviously we don't expect that to happen. You know, there's a bunch kind of out there in terms of other jobs that could be open that he might be right for, that he could view as better situations. You know, I think it'd be weird of the Cavs to like churn through another coach. So, I don't think JB's like the greatest coach in the world, but I think he's solid. And I think he's really relating to the guys for the most part. Now we'll get to a guy that I'm not sure exactly what's going on there. And I'm sure you can guess who I'm talking about based on tonight's game, but I don't really have an issue with this. I don't quite get why people would have a massive umbrage of this. It's not the most inspired choice, but like I think the Cavs are just like, we know what we're getting here. We can trust him for at least a little bit and see what we can get out of him, and we'll see where this goes. But it's like, it also is probably like these teams don't do these things without sort of knowing what the availability of other guys might be. And I would guess that the Cavs are like, okay, there's going to be a lot of openings this summer. We don't want to just fire a guy to have to hire somebody worse.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think JB Bickerstaff, for the most part, is, you know, an average coach overall. And, you know, let me just, the Kenny Atkinson thing, you know, like you said, is true. The Chicago, I know Jim Boylan talks about how his job is safe, but he could very well be gone this summer if Chicago cleans house just on the front office overall. And that's in a very appealing position for Kenny Atkinson to pursue. The Knicks make a lot of sense as well. Like, Cleveland is like a pie in the sky scenario. Like, the Cavs have to relinquish probably a lot of control to him in order to make that happen. But, you know, JB Bickerstaff was a solid hire overall, and it still makes me wonder what could have been if the Cavs went with him over John Beilein to begin with. But it's not a lot to speculate on now. But he has now coached 11 games of the Cavaliers. He is 5-6 as head coach, and he has a pulse of this team. And you and I can talk about this ad nauseum, but what he's doing is not necessarily earth-shattering in terms of the grand scheme of the NBA and like coaching as a whole. But for the Cavaliers, what he's done so far has been night and day compared to what Beilein was doing, just in terms of just simplifying the offense and defense and dialing things back a little bit and just making it easier overall. And just the fact that he has the pulse with respect to this team definitely helps make the case easier. And like you said, maybe he just kind of gives the Cavs a semblance of normalcy and stability that they haven't had in such a long time, and he may not be like the sexiest hire, the most like the best possible hire to get you where you want to be, but he'll keep things steady for you until you figure out what you want it to go next.
Yeah, I think at least like going into next year with like the guy, I think just carryover from year to year could like honestly just be something the Cavs should just try and like go for. Like I'm good with it. Yeah. They could just have that. That would be, you know, I think frankly a positive for them to just have like a summer where they're not hiring a new coach, implementing stuff. Like they can just have JB, you know, ideally I think retain all their assistants, assuming like they kind of like those guys. You know, I don't know what they think. I don't know like how he, you know, things could change, but, you know, I think like Antonio Lang, like it's not like the Cavs have bad assistants. Like Antonio Lang is very, very well regarded throughout the league. You know, they didn't keep Dan Garrett and the other guys from the last staff for no reason. Like, those guys were well liked for the work they did under the previous administration. So like, you know, I don't really have like an issue with kind of the stuff they did here. No. Yeah, I think this and makes all the sense.
What I ask you is,
yeah, go ahead.
How do you build a winning culture when the losses continue to pile up? How do you get a disheartened team to believe once again? That was J.B. Bickerstaff's task, and when he took over the departing coach, John Beilein, which, you know, sounds like John died here. Rest in peace, John. Yeah. And suddenly, the staff has done just that. Just wanted to, you know, drop that nugget because you and I got a good laugh out of that. But
oh, my God.
You know, you know.
Yeah, if but, you know, you know. Yeah, we're gonna wrap up there on this first segment, but oh my goodness, that's where we're at right now. Just don't write hype.
Cleveland's in an okay place coaching, and it could be worse. That could be a whole lot worse.
That's the moral of the story here. And look, he could get fired at the end of next year, and they could still be paying somebody else. So we'll see what ends up happening there. Okay, quick break. We'll be back with more Locked On Cavs. If you haven't already, go check out the Locked On Browns podcast. There's a great episode up right now with Mac Robinson from 92.3 The Fan in Browns Wire, talking with Jeff about all Browns stuff. You really, I think, get a kick out of that episode, so please go check that out wherever you're listening to Locked On Cavs. We'll be right back. All right, we are back here on the Locked On Cavs to get into Cavs Bulls. The Cavs lose this one, Evan, 108-103. Mm-hmm. Colin Sexton, 26 points, another big scoring night for him. Larry Nance Jr. had a really, really good night off the bench, 16 points, 6 of 6 from the field, made 2 3-pointers, 6 assists, 4 boards. You saw minutes from Matt Mooney, as the Cavs did not have Zizic. Zizic didn't play tonight, which I don't know if that's injury or not. I don't know if there's something I missed there. You also didn't have Garland for the fifth straight game. None of the 10-day guys played. And then you didn't have Kevin Porter Jr. obviously was still out. And it's still kind of a thin team right now, but you did have all the starters plus Nance playing all 30-plus minutes. Drummond ended up with 21-7. Love had 17, 8-7. Jetty had 9 points, 4-16 from the field, a couple of good plays at the very least. Dele had another 8-assist game. Continues to just kind of provide some decent stuff in his limited minutes. But what did you make of this game overall?
A little up and down. I think Cleveland had a better chance of winning this game if they didn't shoot 25% from 3-point range. They made 6 of their 24 attempts to Chicago's 12 makes to their 34 attempts. And Andre Drummond kind of choking a little bit at the free throw line. And that's a 4-point difference as well. If Drummond makes his free throws and Nance makes at least one of the two he missed, this is a tied game going overtime. If Nance makes all of them, the Cavs squeak by on this one. But that's like a lot of hypotheticals and rabbit holes we could go down here all day on. But no, Colin Sexton looks sharp. He, scoring wise at least, and he's making good reads still with the 5 assists, obviously, but the 5 turnovers still, you know, whatever. Kevin Love could not hit a 3-pointer to save his life tonight, but still finished the night flirting with a triple-double of 17, 8, and 7, and he'll take that. But no, I think Larry Nance Jr. was, besides Sexton, the best player for Cleveland tonight, and he just stuffed the stat sheet. And I think I forget who tweeted this or who saw, but I was kind of scrolling through the timeline before we got on here, and somebody said, like, Larry Nance, the recent development of Larry Nance being able to play the 3 through the 5 has just been one of the more exciting things that happened to Cleveland this year, and I would agree to an extent. I think you and I touched on this, like how often could Bickerstaff go to this against teams on the road, just like in this road trip to just kind of test how legitimate Nance is at the 3, but maybe it can work in certain scenarios, because I do feel like one of Drummond or one of Kevin Love will be back next year. My money's on Andre Drummond, and if you're able to plug and play and slide Larry Nance in the line, it just makes things a lot more fun and a lot more interesting. But it was a winnable game, and I think for just the draft lottery sake, I think it's okay that the Cavs lost this one.
Yeah, I think the one thing there was that he went away from it, that lineup, a little bit in the second half after leaning on in the first half, and I think I just prefer the Thompson Nance love version as opposed to the Drummond love Nance version. I think the one has just looked better, and I don't love some of the stuff there. So I want to ask you this. This is kind of my big thing from this game. I don't know what to make of Drummond's game because the raw numbers are good.
Mm-hmm.
He was awful in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
Like, absolutely lackadaisical on both ends of the floor. All night, I felt he was very poor at using his very large frame to establish any kind of position inside. You know, I think you look at, like, there was a play where he, like, got stripped by Thaddeus Young, complained about it, then kind of lazily ran back the other way, committed a really dumb foul to give up an N1, and then got a technical in the span of, like, 30 seconds. He was better in the second half. You know, he got closer to the rim a little bit. He picked up some rebounds. Like, there was stuff that you like that I thought he played better. But overall, I did not think he was very good. I think if you are, and he had 6 turnovers, like some just really poor turnovers that I think kind of cost the Cavs a little bit in this one with the Bulls getting 20 points off of turnovers, which, you know, the Cavs actually had more, but at least the Cavs kind of gave away some points there. He has to be better. And I think that's one of the things where it's like, it is on JB to like get Drummond to buy in. Like it's a different scenario. Like this isn't a title winning team. Or a playoff team by any means, but if you just look at like what really cemented Ty Lue was that he could go to LeBron at number 1 on the roster to number 15 on the roster and be like, you're going to do what you need to do for this team. You're going to sacrifice. You're going to bust your ass. And you're going to compete. And like, again, Drummond, certainly I'm not going to say like he's not buying in or anything like that, but like that's the one, it sticks out like a sore thumb compared to everybody else in terms of his effort level.
Yeah, and that was one of the concerns when he was coming from Detroit to Cleveland was just like how engaged is he in a losing situation and how engaged can he be to overall affect your team. And when he was first traded here and then we hopped on the pod with Carter, Justin, and Spencer, we talked about that and the fact that I just firmly believe and I still have this firm stance that Andre Drummond is a really nice complimentary piece and I can just look back at the game he played before against San Antonio, where you and I both agreed that that was his best game so far in a Cavaliers uniform, where he had 28 points, 17 rebounds, three blocks, one assist. And, I mean, yeah, it wasn't foul trouble, but only had one turnover that night, which is huge for him and solid overall. But then you look at this game, like, yeah, no, he was just kind of lazy and lackadaisical and just wasn't engaged and locked in. And I think Drummond is just an up-and-down player. And just to get back to my original point that he, in a winning situation, which I don't know if we've ever really seen him in one, because let's be frank, like at their best in Detroit was them getting mollywopped in the playoffs, and like he was kind of non-existent just because the style of player that he is kind of a dinosaur at this point. But so he's not going to make like a huge, huge, huge impact and like affect the win column for the Cavs, and maybe like games like against San Antonio, you can make a case that that's actually a possibility. But no, it was just kind of frustrating to watch him in the first half, and it was like a weird Jekyll and Hyde effect where he looked a little bit more engaged in the second half at times, but at the same time, like, just bad body language overall and just kind of felt like a clunky, awkward fit. And yeah, no, I think that falls on JB and the coaching staff just to try and like somehow some way tap into Drummond to get to him so that he can tap into his God-given abilities and actually use his gifts instead of just kind of one, freelancing, and then two, just not really being effective while he's out there on the floor for the Cavs.
There was a point where I wondered if they should have pulled him late.
For who, though?
Like, that's the problem.
What lineup would you run?
That's the problem. Like, that's the counter to me. It's like, if Tristan's on there, I'm playing Tristan Thompson like 100 million times out of 100.
And I think that's what JB would have done if Tristan was available.
Yeah, which I think that brings up, you know, I think that brings up some questions about, you know, about one under Drummond, his kind of fit. I think the one argument you could have if there was a guy like the lineup that kind of worked was I thought McKinney just kind of provided them with some juice that I thought was at least useful. So, you know, maybe it's hard to argue, like, just in terms of the quality and the upside of the players that, like, you should be playing like Alphonso McKinney over Andre Drummond. But, like, I just thought Drummond was so unhelpful in the first half that, like, it maybe tainted me the rest of the way. I'm willing to admit that, like, that's entirely possible that I did that. Could have been better. Just could have been, I think, better in a lot of ways. Although, contributed. Did you think him, like, at least kind of getting some easy buckets laid and some of that other stuff made up for some of his other issues in this one?
Yes and no. I mean, you're totally justified in being frustrated with him and, like, you know, him souring the water, muddying the waters and poisoning the water supply and burning all of our crops. I'm janking this SpongeBob quote right now, but no, like, he was just frustrated overall. Like, I get, like, that just kind of, like, just puts a sour, bad taste in your mouth to begin with. And then you can just kind of pop the question up when he, like, starts to look in and starts getting, like, look locked in and get these easy baskets. Is this a little too late here, bud? And I think you and I both, like, we're both on the same page here that if Tristan was available, JB would just ride the hot hand. And that's consistently been Tristan down the stretch because Tristan just plays with so much energy every single night. It just feels like Bickerstaff's hand was kind of forced, and maybe this is just an instance where you can point to the fact that even though acquiring Drummond for pennies on the dollar at the trade deadline was a nice move to maybe see, like, does a two-time All-Star center that fits in the team's timeline work long-term, and you kind of have, like, a trial period to figure things out, like, yeah, that's fine, but maybe at this point you also point to the fact that even if Andre Drummond does opt in next year, maybe his days are numbered in Cleveland if he continues with, like, just these kind of polarizing games of his.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Okay, quick break. We'll be back with more Locked On Cavs. If you aren't already, check out the whole Locked On NBA network. So, like, for instance, if you're trying to prepare for the rest of this week, let's say you want to listen to games about the Hornets and the Hawks and learn about the two teams the Cavs are going to face this weekend, I sure could have done that better. Check out Locked On Hawks, check out Locked On Hornets, Brad Rowland and the whole, like, three-man crew on Locked On Hornets, including Doug Branson, do a great job. So go check out those shows and learn more about the Cavs opponents. But do that wherever you listen to Locked On Cavs and after you listen to this podcast, hopefully get us to listen all the way through. I promise. Good takes coming. We'll be right back. All right, Evan and I are back here. Evan, where else do you want to go? Cavs, Bulls, anything else that kind of pops to the top of your mind when you think about this one?
Matt Mooney looked all right. I mean, he didn't score. He had two rebounds and one steal tonight, but he looked solid enough defensively. And I'm looking at the box score, like, it's sitting right in front of me right now. I am perplexed that Zizek didn't play tonight because Cleveland is, you know, hurting for bench depth at this point. And I don't know, maybe you could plug Zizek in situations where Drummond is kind of mean detrimental. And it's just, I don't know. I think we just need to wait for the Cavs to get fully healthy. And I feel like they're almost there again, but it's just, like, it's a goofy, awkward time. And this game is definitely winnable, which is the thing. And I'm just kind of interested to see where things go. I don't know. What about you? What are some takeaways you had from this game that were just kind of big to you?
I thought it was kind of a weird game, for one. It just, like, was a little, like, all over the place in terms of, like, its flow. It just kind of was, like...
Could you believe they were in it with, like, the last 30 seconds of the game? I walked away from my TV for a minute thinking, like, okay, well, I might as well start getting set up. And then I'm like, oh, no, they're pulling me back in. Here we go.
You know, yeah, you know, when you think about it, that, sorry, I'm laughing at a tweet that compared Joe Biden to Steph Curry, and I'm just like, there's a lot of 3-1 jokes there that, like, I don't want to make for my own mental, for my own sanity, and, like, hope for this country. But yeah, okay. But getting back to the game, like, I thought it was good of Bickerstaff to actually play Matt Mooney and just, like, get to an 8-man rotation. Like, you have this road trip, we have a back to back coming up. Like, even if he only plays 13 minutes and, like, maybe McKinney only plays 23, like, at least you're not like running these guys completely into the ground. Like that, that's something of a positive. He did say on Tuesday at Shoot Around that the expectation is that Darius Garland is going to be back sometime in this road trip. Now, is that Friday? Is that Saturday? We don't know, but there are more bodies coming, but I think you're going to see some of the fatigue on this one. Amid a pretty bad game, I thought Jetty Osmond had maybe the two biggest highlight plays of the game. Had a chase down block on Kobe White, and then he had that really, really nice kind of drive and finish right in space where he kind of got the whole Cavs bench really engaged. I thought that was good. Honestly, surprising the Cavs were able to stay competitive in this one, considering Kevin Love was 2 of 13 on three-pointers and started off with 6 from 3, if not more than that. Yeah. That's just kind of where I kind of lost my notes, got a little like more, a little less focused in that one. So it's just like kind of wild that they were able to almost win this game. And some of that's, Nance hit a three late, Sexton. I'll say this. Probably the two most impressive plays for me in this one, that aside from the stuff, the Jetty stuff, was probably that we're both Sexton related. So he had that one really nice pass he had in where he like kind of arced it into Nance, who just like had to do like one little dribble and then dunked. And then I love that the keeper, I'll have to kind of see how many times it did it. I think it was at least three. But lately, since Bickerstaff took over, they're doing more where Sexton is like they're taking a version of the quick Jordan Clarkson back cut and Dele throws in the ball inside kind of action they ran a lot when JC was with the Cavs last year and this year playing with Dele. They're running version of that are a little more orchestrated and they're a little more set up where they're just like relying on Dele to get Colin the ball, and they're using Colin's athleticism and his kind of ability to finish with some with some speed, with some kind of power, coming around screens. And like, even though Drummond in certain instances like wasn't always like setting the screen, his body was at least like kind of giving like Kobe White or whomever like something to navigate. So I like that they're doing that with Sexton and trying to get him. He had a very efficient game despite not taking a single three-pointer.
Yeah, no, I agree. And there's some encouraging signs in this game, and it was definitely winnable overall. But I guess, like I said in the opening segment, this might be good for Cleveland long-term because Chicago was a team they were kind of, toeing the line with in terms of draft lottery positioning. And this loss to Chicago definitely helps Cleveland kind of widen the gap a little bit between the two and like keep their pick. But let me ask you this. How much Kobe White have you watched this season?
Not a ton. But the thing is, I've watched enough and like read enough about him to like feel like I have a general vibe of him. And I'm just going to say this. I was like super wrong on him. Like I was like more if they had picked a little later than 5, he would have been someone that I would have been cool with them taking. I'm very sure that I was wrong about that.
And you led me perfectly into my question. Would you have rather at this point in the NBA season, we are 65 games in, we are almost done covering this team on a night to night basis, Chris, where we can start, thinking about the future instead of now.
But 3 days a week of episodes?
Perhaps, maybe.
That's a thing. That's a thing. We'll talk about it.
I'm learning. But says you, I'll fill in the other two gaps. I'll just talk for a solid 45 minutes. But anyways, would you, looking with the power of hindsight, would you rather the Cleveland drafted Kobe White or Darius Garland?
I'm still a believer, I think, in Garland. But like, if you look at the numbers, White's been better. He's like got a negative. So if you look at value over replacement, Garland's like a negative 1.7 compared to like the replacement level player. White's only like a 0.2 negative. He's shooting on, they're both. So Garland's shooting a little bit better. He's shooting just over 40%. White's under 40% coming into Tuesday's games. They're both, I kind of coincidentally, both shooting 35.5% on 5.8 3-point attempts per game, which is just hilarious that that's exactly the same. He's a little younger. I would just say when you look at, I guess I would say I would still lean towards keeping Garland because the passing stuff has been encouraging enough for me. And looking at the advanced numbers, at least in terms of assist percentage, Garland's a little bit higher, about 2% higher. So that's like a little bit, that's a little bit encouraging. And is doing that on a lower usage rate. So at least I, that indicates to me that I can feel okay about that. But that's the caveat that I would need to watch more Coby White. But I would still lean towards Garland because I think we're going to talk about this with Greg Schwartz on our Thursday show. I'm getting closer to marking the season as sort of like an incomplete for Darius Garland.
Yeah. I'd agree.
I don't
want
to say incomplete necessarily, but it's just sort of like I don't know how to like grade him. I just
not
don't
enough there. Yeah. Did not finish. I don't know.
Where are you on this? Where are you, would you rather have White or would you rather have Garland?
I would still rather have Garland just because of the fact that I feel like if you put Coby White and Colin Sexton out there as your backcourt from
Is not showing up the games.
No, defensively it's a nightmare, but I think there's just so much overlap with White and Sexton, like more so than there is with Garland and Sexton, that it would just be so bad and so toxic, and I don't think I'd be making a hard stance saying that the Cavs need to bench Sexton at this point, just because like you said, I think Garland has more of those natural point guard tendencies of his, and I think that has more appeal to me overall than White, but I'm also just agreeing with you in the fact that I still don't know how to proper evaluate. Like, I mean, if you wanted me to be blunt and be like an asshole, I could say you can give Darius Garland like a C- to a solid D for this season. Just like it's been a very underwhelming rookie campaign.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I also just am like gonna. I think I'm grading him and just sort of like wondering. Like, I will retroactively go back and, like, change his grade and give him, like, a worse grade if next year he's just this again. Because yeah. I'm willing to just be like, okay, he didn't play last year. I'm willing to give him a year to get his body kind of right and stuff like that.
And I agree with that 100%. And I think part of the problem is a lot of people were down on Sexton for the longest time. And Sexton had this massive turnaround after the All-Star break in his rookie campaign, which, you know, kind of salvages the people poo-pooing the pick overall and just like him as a player, because a lot of people were ready to like sell him to the Wolves or just cast him out to the Wolves at that point. And, you know, just that strong finish to his rookie season, getting all rookie honors and everything, just kind of, you know, helped make it better. And then having a strong sophomore campaign and, you know, just keep getting stronger and stronger and better, like that definitely helps. Like, I think that's a point of frustration with Cavs fans of Darius Garland. But I think overall, Kyrie Irving just being so good so early definitely just, you know, raises the frustration level with the fact that Cavs fans are a little spoiled having arguably just witnessed arguably the best point guard. If you mean you can consider him or Mark Price at this point, the best point guard in franchise history in Kyrie Irving. Like, and then you have Darius Garland who needs more time and you have to be more patient with him. So yeah, no, I agree with that fact that maybe you need to wait a little bit before you sell the farm on Darius Garland. And if he, and I've told people this privately, that I'm not too concerned with this rookie season. Like, it's been up and down for the most part. Like, there's like flashes of potential, and I'm sure people are rolling their eyes and be saying flashes of potential about Darius Garland again. But if he looks this bad this time next year, or even earlier, like around the All-Star break, or maybe even a little earlier before that, yeah, no, I'll start being legitimately concerned, and I'll start thinking like, well, shit, Cleveland just whiffed on the fifth pick in the draft, considering that maybe there are some better players that the Cavs could use as foundational pieces over Garland. But I don't know. I'm not ready to completely give up on him. But yeah, I think an incomplete grade might be fair. You need more time just to properly evaluate what you have with him going forward.
Yeah, let's wrap it up on this kind of one note here, thinking about the rest of this kind of draft. So here's just the list of guys. I'm not going to go full all the way down the list, because I think if you're going to like say like, oh, they could have just taken KPJ at 5 or like something like that, like that's unrealistic based on how the draft sort of works. Here's just like, I'm going to give you the next like 5 guys and you can tell me if you would rather have them right now. And just, I want a yes or no, or keep Darius Garland. Jarrett Culver.
No.
Coby White.
No.
Jackson Hayes.
No.
Roy Hachimura.
No.
Cam Reddish.
No, these are all pretty underwhelming picks so far.
Reddish is the one where I do the kombucha girl face because the defense stuff from him is like, oh my god.
Yeah.
That's the one where I'm a little, even though like I'm not sure how good he is, and like the shooting stuff was like is only just recently like getting a little bit better. The on ball defensive stuff from him is just like so good that yeah. I'm like, oh my god. Like, oh my god, maybe we like all freaked out a little bit too much about Cam Reddish.
Yeah. I don't know. Trevor
That's the only still. One that I'm like, because Culver's just been kind of like whatever. And he was the guy that I would have taken at five, so it shows you that I'm an idiot. Same. Hey, you're no, not I'm an idiot. I'm an idiot.
No, we're idiots. We just we value the opinion of Trevor Magnotti to an extreme ability because he does this for a living, while we just kind of bug him for answers, but
and then take him for free labor.
Pretty much, yes. But no, that's like a pretty underwhelming list. And yeah, Cam Reddish's like on ball defense and defensive potential is pretty strong. And then you can keep going further down that list. You have like Cam Johnson, PJ Washington, Tyler Herro, Romeo Langford, and Sekou Doumbouya just to round out like the top 10 15, players. Yeah, the top 15. Like, you could talk me into Coby White. You could talk me into Cam Reddish, but it would take a lot of talking. And like, I was all in on Jarrett Culver before then, but. Maybe it's just, you know, just him being in Minnesota might be part of the problem, but I don't know. This rookie class is outside of Zion, Ja, and then RJ Barrett's been looking better recently. It's been, and Matisse Thybulle and KPJ, obviously, like those are later picks, but like guys who are picked in the lottery for the most part have been kind of underwhelming, and I think maybe people need to just kind of wait and see before we start calling who is and who isn't a bust, but. Yeah, no, I think I would still take Darius Garland over all those players you listed. What about you?
Yeah, I think it is. I think, you know, I think, again, Reddish is the one guy I think about. I have to do a deeper dive into Culver. As much as I like guys like Thybulle, I think Brandon Clark is obviously very, very good.
Clark.
Grant Williams is someone I quite like. You know, I think there are guys that are good, but I think Garland clearly has a potential. And I think about just that top 10, it's like, okay, like if they missed on that, that's or he ends up looking better next year, I think that's what you're hoping for. And interestingly, like he's played more minutes, like even though he's not played all these games, like Garland's played 1,800 minutes. That's more than Ja Morant coming in at Tuesday night. That's more than Barrett. That's obviously more than Zion. That's more than Culver. That's more than Coby White. It's the top number of minutes coming into tonight's game of any of the top 10 picks in terms of raw minutes played.
Yeah,
which I did not realize.
He's a seasoned rookie, but it's still an underwhelming season rookie year.
The only rookie that has played more minutes than him is DeAndre Hunter. So one guy in the top 10 has played more minutes than him, and then you have guys like Eric Pascal that are close and stuff like that. But that's like kind of interesting that I wouldn't have guessed that, but it's just one of those weird things. Okay, that's going to be it for this episode of Locked On Cavs. And then I'll be back tomorrow. Greg Schwartz from Bleacher Report will be on with us to talk about all things Cavs and everything else that's going on. And again, follow along on Twitter at Locked On Cavs. I'm on Twitter at CWM Rights. Evan at Am Not Evan. We'll talk to you tomorrow and enjoy your Wednesdays and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.